Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good evening and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you're with us today. Well, this week there were breaking news at the Ohio State House as the famed pro-life piece of legislation that many of you are aware of, the Heartbeat Bill, did pass the Ohio Senate. This has been a battle for the last 4 years. The bill has passed the Ohio House chamber in two general assemblies, but it got held up in the Ohio Senate with its members having more concerns with the legislation. You're listening to News in Focus, a broadcast of the Ohio Christian Alliance. I'm your host, Chris Long. And joining me in just a few minutes will be Barry Sheets, who is the senior consultant, a principled policy consultant, and he represents several pro-life, pro-family organizations in Columbus. And he'll be giving us an update from the State House as they're going to be burning the midnight oil tonight as the state legislature will be in session into the late hours of this evening, maybe even past midnight, as they are wrapping things up in this General Assembly and then packing it in for the Christmas holiday, and then it starts all over again in January. But any bills that are not, that have been introduced in this General Assembly that are not addressed, they will have to be reintroduced all over again, and that includes the Pastors Protection Act, and I want to give you an update on that. Many of you on this program are aware that we've been pushing for a piece of legislation, House Bill 286, sponsored by State Representative Nino Vitelli and a number of other representatives from the Ohio General Assembly. The measure, of course, was introduced last year and moved through committee, and then just 10 days ago passed the Family Advancement Committee, chaired by State Representative Tim Ginter. It did pass with a 9-4 vote, and we were waiting for a floor vote. Unfortunately, that is not going to happen this General Assembly. We understand. We got reports from leadership and members of the Ohio General Assembly that that legislation is not going to be moving this GA. We are told that it will move quickly in the new year in January. We'll have to wait and see about that. We'll report here on this program. We're also in discussions with the incoming State Senator, Senate President will be State Senator Larry Obaugh from Medina, will be the new Senate President. He says that he has a couple of sponsors that he thinks that will take the legislation. Again, we're talking about the Pastors Protection Act in the new year, and so we hope that that absolutely gets done. But with us on the phone right now is Barry Sheets from Principled Policy, and he is the senior consultant of that organization, representing Christian interest at the Ohio State House, pro-life, pro-family, and has had a wealth of experience over the years and has had his hand in a lot of good legislation. And right now he's busy with a piece of pro-life legislation this last week. Barry, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Now, you're calling from the Ohio State House as we speak, and the members are in session.
Yes, they are. The Senate is active and live on the floor right now with a full docket of bills, and the House is they've been working through what they have in front of them, and they are right now at ease waiting on messages from the Senate so that they can start concurring on legislation and finish up.
So there literally are legislative aid runners back and forth between the chamber this afternoon and into this evening. Is that right?
Yes, there are still negotiations that are going on behind the scenes between leadership in both chambers. There are a lot of things that are still, as I call it, wet cement that hasn't settled yet. It's going to be a long evening here, Chris, and we're going to probably see some pretty good things coming out, and some we may see some that may not be so good. So I'm down here and probably will be down here for the duration, bouncing back and forth between the House and the Senate chambers. And we will find out exactly what we get when this version of the General Assembly closes sine die at the end of the year.
Well, that's right. And we do have a number of friends in the Ohio General Assembly that will be reporting to us, members on both sides of the chambers, that are concerned about the same things that you and I are about these pieces of legislation. Now, let's talk about the big news this week, of course, was the heartbeat bill. Tell us what happened there with the Ohio Senate finally moving the measure.
Well, as you know, Chris, the heartbeat bill has been a passion of many people, yourself and me included. We have been working on it for nearly 6 years from the time it was introduced. It passed the House three different times, but never got through the Senate for numerous reasons, being held up, not being heard, et cetera. And it looked like this session was going to be the same story repeated once again. However, I believe a lot of things changed with the election of President-elect Donald Trump, including, it seems, at least publicly reported, the view and attitude of current Senate President Keith Faber to the chances for heartbeat possibly being upheld by the court. So with that in mind, and I believe with some negotiations behind the scene between the two chambers, on Tuesday, that bill was brought up and on the Senate and was amended into another bill coming out of the Senate, a House bill, so that the House, all they had to do was vote yes or no to concur with the Senate amendments. And when that happened, heartbeat was passed by both chambers and is now awaiting the signatures of the two leaders, Speaker Cliff Rosenberger and Senator Faber, in order to then be sent by the clerk of the House to the governor, where he has 10 days once he receives the bill, in order to make his decision on signing it into law, letting it go into law without his signature, or vetoing all or part of the measure because it had a money appropriation in it, which then subjects it to the governor's line item veto.
So the governor basically has three options here. So it did pass the Ohio House, the Ohio Senate, concurred on by the House again. It's going to the governor's desk, probably with a pile of bills as they get their work done later today. And there'll be more measures that will be enacted. And then, of course, he has three options. He could do a line item veto. He could sign the legislation into law, or he could let it sit on his desk for 10 days. And the law of Ohio is, even without his signature, it becomes law. Is that correct?
That is true. Unlike the federal level, at the presidential level, if he holds it for 10 days, it becomes a pocket veto. In Ohio, we do exactly the opposite. If it sits for 10 days without the governor or the executive's action, then it becomes law. So that's a great provision in Ohio's Constitution that allows for that particular situation. Chris, there is, and again, you're right, there is only really three, because the fourth is vetoing the entire bill. And because the heartbeat provisions were added into a bill that dealt with child abuse and neglect reporting, I don't believe the governor is going to veto that portion of the bill if he does choose to do some veto action.
Right. So we'll know here probably in the next week or so, given the governor's actions, of what he'll do with the heartbeat bill. So we would encourage people to call and ask the governor to sign the heartbeat bill legislation. Now, let's move on to another pro-life piece of legislation you've been working on, we've been working on, and that is the Unborn Child Pain Capable Protection Act. Tell us about that bill.
Yes, that's Senate Bill 127, Chris. That's a bill that started over here. Senator Peggy Lehner introduced it in the Senate, and the Senate passed it back in May of last year. It was sent to the House. The House began hearings in the Community and Family Advancement Committee, and then we got into the fall, and the hearings stopped. The bill was basically set to the side for a while. I think that there were some concerns over actions and whether, again, I think the early discussions, even going back into last fall, about what do we do with different pro-life bills that we may all want to finish up together. So that got held off, but then this last week, this week, it was brought back up. And as you and I had talked about at another time privately, we found that there was a little bit of language in Senate Bill 127 that inadvertently, I believe, and I don't believe the drafters meant to do this, but the way it worked out, the way it was worded, created a health exception to allow certain abortions with a broad range of health conditions that weren't necessarily impacting or would have a threat to the life of the mother. And so we needed to get that language out of there if this bill was going to be approved. And so working with our number of folks, yourself, with Dr. David Prentice at the Charlotte Legere Institute, working with the leadership, working with the sponsors, we got everybody to agree to amend that bill. And that happened last night, Chris, in committee. The bill, the amendment was taken. It was an 11-4 vote on the amendment, and, well, not surprisingly, the bill was passed from the committee by 11-4. So it is now marked up to go on the House floor today, and when the House resumes in session, they'll take that bill up to vote on it. And I don't believe there are any other amendments that are coming to the bill. And then once they vote on it, they will send it back to the House yet this evening, or the Senate yet this evening, for the Senate to concur in the House amendment.
Well, again, another good piece of legislation. The amendment was needed, as you said, to clean up language, and that's why it's so important to be vigilant over these bills as they make their way through the chambers. A good bill initially, but it needed to have some language cleaned up on it and have some experts weigh in on it. Thanks for your vigilance on that, Dr. Prentice, of course, of the Lozier Institute. And again, this is a bill that's being upheld by the courts. I think we were to simplify it, that's a 20-week bill, 20 weeks of gestation. Those are being upheld by the courts around the country. The heartbeat bill goes a little further, somewhere around 12 weeks, between the window of 8 and 12 weeks when a heartbeat can be detected. That's not facing that good of prospects right now in the courts currently, but that could change with new justices being appointed to not only the Supreme Court but to federal courts, and that's going to take a few years down the road with the new President-elect Donald Trump appointing conservatives to the bench. So, again, folks, things to pray about. We are making headway, and Ohio is making news once again. Barry, just going to go real quick with you here on the Pastors Protection Act. We got it passed out of committee, but then it stalled and didn't go to the floor. What happened there?
Well, what happened there, I believe, was, and from my understanding, that the sponsor, Representative Vitale, realized that there wasn't enough time to get it both off the floor and then through a full range of committee hearings in the Senate with the, well, only about 3 days we have left over here before they were going to be finished up. And so I think he wisely decided that, and he talked and I think worked with leadership in the House, that they are going to prioritize that bill when they come back in January. And get it moving and get it finished up over here and get it so it's over here in the Senate so there's plenty of time to work it and get that bill adopted coming up into 2017. There just wasn't enough time to finish it this year, Chris. With the lateness of the hour of when it finally came out of committee, it really put a damper on the prospects of being able to finish it.
Well, that's why we're pushing for it earlier last spring, and unfortunately it got held up in committee. And then they took a long recess for the election season, came back in the lame duck, and as you said, the time ran out. Now, I know that Representative Vitale has an agreement with the Speaker, and we hope that that indeed is the case and will keep people posted. But as you and I both know, we've seen a lot of promises go by the wayside at the State House over the years, and we hope that that's not one of them. I was sharing with the early in the program that Senator Obaugh is interested in having the bill introduced in the Senate as well. He understands the threat that exists for churches and religious institutions in the new legal environment and climate. And so it is least it good that these legislators understand that this is needed legislation.
Oh, absolutely. And Chris, it's funny you mentioned that a little bit earlier because I have a favorite saying just as a joke, and that's that a promise from a politician is one that's written on sand using water.
Well, that's right. That's why we have our folks pray. And, of course, miracles do happen, like it did with the heartbeat bill. Well, there's another piece of legislation called MOLST, or Medical Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment. That's Senate Bill 165. This is a piece of legislation we're opposing. And this was introduced over in the Senate by State Senator Peggy Lehner. Tell us about this bill.
Okay, well, Chris, first of all, MOLST stands for Medical Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment, or as our coalition likes to call it, Medical Orders for Life-Stopping Treatment.
Right.
Basically, it would basically be a standing medical order that replaces a do-not-resuscitate order, and it would be something that the physician can direct someone under him, whether it be a social worker, a chaplain, a nurse's aide, anybody else, to go in and have this discussion with the patient, who may or may not be in a terminal state, on what their wishes are, or whether or not they want to keep them on life support, or even to the point of, do you really want comfort care or not? Do you want us to feed you and give you water while you're dying. We find this to be a complete capitulation to the culture of death, and we have fought this thing hard. Now, we couldn't beat it in the Senate, but we have so far kept it from coming up in the House. But our concern right now is with this last day of a lame duck session, you never know which way a duck's going to fly when it's lame. And so we have been watching, and there's a bill that has just come out of committee this morning that addresses the same sections of the of our statutes that the Most bill addresses. Mm-hmm. And so we're very concerned about an attempt on the Senate floor this afternoon by Senator Lehner or by one of her colleagues to insert the provisions of Most into this other bill. And if that happens, we really are going to be in a very desperate situation, because then the only option that comes after they voted is that the House would have to refuse to concur in the Senate amendments, and it goes to a conference committee. And I'm not sure right now, with the House not moving that bill, if the House is sending the message to the Senate, don't do that, because we're not going to accept that bill.
So, well, that's right, and we're opposed to
and
this
that's
bill.
Why negotiations are still going on all day long here.
Well, that's right, and thank you for being there to be vigilant to the last hour here, and we're going to be viewing online as well. In fact, those that will be listening to the program tonight, if you want to log on to the Ohio State website, you can get there through our website, the Ohio Christian Alliance, and just click on the state legislature, and you can watch it live. So you can actually see the proceedings in either the Ohio Senate or the Ohio House live, and they'll be doing it probably all the way up to 10, 11, or midnight tonight, given past precedents of how long these things can go. But that said, again, Most is a bill that we want, you know, Senate Bill 165, we want to see get defeated. I'm glad to see our pro-life friends in the House understand the folly of this bill, which is really a right to die bill. Euthanasianists are busy at the Ohio State House. They're trying to enact, actually, legislation of right to die. But, you know, we also talk about end-of-life decisions should be made between a patient, their doctor, and also someone who's a family advisor, someone who's there to advocate for them. When my father was going through basically the end of life, and he and I had had these discussions over the years. He's a very pro-life. He actually, as a printer, lost some business because there was physicians that were doing either tied some way to the abortion industry. Once he found out of that about that, he said, "I can't print for you any longer," and he lost money. And by the way, he had such a narrow bottom line, he could hardly afford it. But it's an act of conscience. So when it came to that point with Dad, I mean, they were asking me things. Well, do you want him to have a feeding tube? He's not able to feed himself. I said, yes, if you'll insert it down his throat, no surgical feeding tube. So, you know, there's these things that we discussed. He obviously didn't want these exact, you know, extreme measures because he had a fatal heart problem. But we did what we could. Now, it came about that Dad actually recovered and had a rebound for a week and was able to spend quality time with the family and with Mom that last week, then died quietly in his sleep, kind of an answered prayer for us. But these are end-of-life decisions that should be made thoughtfully, but this takes it out of the hands of even the family, to where a doctor could make the decision. Now you're really talking about a real problem here with the Senate Bill 165, which is called Medical Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment. Most is the legislation, and Cincinnati Right to Life, another number of pro-life groups, Citizens for Community Values, our own organization, Ohio Christian Alliance, and others, all oppose this measure. So thank you, Barry, for that update. So what you're saying here, we got to watch it closely, because they might try to pull a trick here on us.
Right. I don't doubt, because again, this bill was one that I keyed on a few weeks ago when I saw that the language in that bill was in the same sections as what Most is amending. And so we've been keeping an eye on it. I've talked to the sponsor of the bill, the House sponsor, and he doesn't support Most. And so he may, you know, stand up and say, don't concur. But then again, it's going to be awfully hard, as he's an outgoing member who's with us. You know, I'm not saying he's not with us, but he's an outgoing member, and this is one of his last bills. It might be hard for him to say, kill my bill. So we're watching it. It came out of committee this morning. It's been read on the Senate floor for setting it up. They are finishing up what they had on their official calendar here just now. They're going to break and then go into a caucus, and then they're coming back. And it's when they come back is when we'll know whether or not they're going to try to do a Most amendment into its House Bill 451. And we're hoping that they stand down on that, because if they stand down on that here in the Senate, We know that there's no one in the House who's attempting to amend it into a Senate bill. So we might be able to get this done and get through the session without that coming back up.
Well, thank you, Barry. This has been a very insightful update from the State House. Appreciate you taking time. We're going to let you get back at it. And thank you for all you're doing, because your vigilance there, each time they see either you or I or some of the other groups sitting there, we're it's important to be in the room and watching, and that they see us watching what they're doing. They have to be reminded of that.
Me and Chris, as you know, with my company, you know, we represent Citizens for Community Values, Cleveland Right to Life, Cincinnati Right to Life, Ohio Pro-Life Action. We do affiliate work with Toledo Foundation for Life, with Dayton Right to Life. So when they see us come into the room, they know that we're representing not tens, not hundreds, not thousands, but literally millions of Ohio citizens.
Well, that's right. And how it's so important as pro-life Ohioans have weighed in over the years, obviously the voter guides, the scorecards, and of course calls and letters to the State House, and when people talk to their legislators of their importance on the pro-life issues, that's how this all comes about. It's about the folks out there, and we want to thank them because they're making their voice heard. That's why we're getting some action on pro-life bills this week at the Ohio State House. Barry, thanks so much for joining me on the program.
Thanks again for having me, Chris. I appreciate it.
Again, that's Barry Sheets, Senior Consultant of Principled Policy at the Ohio State House, a live report. And, of course, they'll be working there throughout the evening. And you can watch online at the Ohio General Assembly website, either the Ohio House Chamber or the Senate Chamber, and watch until late hours as they are passing these legislations. Well, again, on the second part of our program today, what we're going to do is listen to last week's broadcast on the coal industry with none other than Bob Murray of Murray Energy. And, of course, there was good news there with the election of all that had transpired with the election of Donald J. Trump, who said, let's put the miners back to work. Let's put the miners back to work. And so the coal industry gets a reprieve, because if it was Hillary Clinton, she wanted to put them all out of work. And, of course, that would have meant higher utility rates for the rest of us and for small families, young families just getting going in life. And that's not something we wanted to see happen. So we're going to go back to that, but you'll appreciate that. We appreciate the update from the Ohio State House today. And we do encourage you to pray for your legislators. Pray for all those in our authority, as the scriptures declare, that we might lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and honesty. And we thank you for tuning in to News in Focus each week at the same time. Tell a friend. Let them know that we're on here 6:30 each Thursday night on WHKW, 12:20 a.m. Also on Sunday nights, 5 o'clock at WHKZ in Youngstown. And we're going to be growing this program this coming year across the state of Ohio. If you'd like to help us by sending in a contribution, you could do so. Write that check to Ohio Christian Alliance and mail it to Post Office Box 3076, Akron, Ohio, 44309. You can also go to our website, just Google Ohio Christian Alliance, and make an online contribution of any amount. Would help us to keep this program on the air. We hope you find it to be helpful and informative. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and on the other side, we're going to have a broadcast of Mr. Bob Murray, and along with Pat Boone and Congressman Bill Johnson, talking about energy policy going forward with the new administration. Don't go away. We'll be right back after these messages.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Insurance Association.
Who might you save?
Your mother, your father, your husband, uncle, aunt, son.
Learn FAST, F-A-S-T, the sudden signs of a stroke, and you could save
your friend, your best friend, teacher, boss, coach.
F, face drooping, A, arm weakness, S, speech difficulty, T, time to call 911. F-A-S-T, face, arm, speech, time. That's F, face drooping, A, arm weakness, S, speech difficulty, T, time to call 911. The sooner they get to the hospital, the sooner they'll get treatment, and that can make a remarkable difference in the recovery of
your neighbor, the waiter, a fellow shopper, a total stranger, grandmother, grandfather.
So learn FAST, the sudden signs of a stroke, then pass it on, because you never know who might save you.
Your wife, your colleague, teammate, mother.
Spot a stroke fast. Visit strokeassociation.org. Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back with our roundtable discussion today, and we're talking about the energy policy going forward. Of course, the coal industry and how that is going to be basically relieved that the war on coal, well, if we get things lined up right, we could probably say cessation of hostilities. We've been calling it the war on coal, and we've been talking about this issue for some time with some experts in the field and exactly what is going to happen. But now that the election results have basically turned the tide on the war on coal. And let's take a look, listen to this news clip from Fox Business News just this early this week.
I'm thinking about the miners all over this country. We're going to put the miners back to work. We're going to put the miners back to work.
Well, that was then candidate President-elect Donald Trump on the campaign trail in May, promising to save the coal industry. Well, let's fast forward to today. Many are wondering if it's just too little too late. Joining me now in the Fox Business exclusive interview, Murray Energy Chairman and CEO Robert Murray. Thanks for joining me. Your expression is the best I've seen in years, if you don't mind me saying.
Well, we're going to be able to hear from Mr. Murray. In fact, the chairman and the chairman, president, and executive officer of Murray Energy is with us today, Mr. Bob Murray, and also Congressman Bill Johnson of Ohio 6th District. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. Good to be on your program again.
Well, thank you.
Good to be here, Chris.
Thank you, Congressman. Thank you, Mr. Murray. You know, Mr. Murray, I saw that clip when you were on Fox Business and when they turned to you and the big smile on your face. It said so much. And for those of us who know just what a grind this has been for you personally and those in the coal industry, you've carried the burden of the families of the miners, those in the industry who... This is their way of life. This is basically how they pay the bills in the industry. And, of course, for the rest of us, as far as economic utility costs, we've talked about that for the last year or so on this program. But today is a day of rejoicing. I mean, the election results, we talked just a few months ago, going into this election, there was a lot of angst. Of course, if you were listening to most of the major media and pollsters, they showed that Hillary Clinton was going to win and not only win, but win big. They kept that up to the final moments until they were shocked with the news that the AP broke about 2:48 in the morning on Wednesday that Donald J. Trump was the new president-elect. And of course, one of the images that came across the screen was the Empire State Building in New York lit up with his image and congratulating him as the 45th president-elect. And of course, as we heard in that clip, Mr. Trump has promised, we're going to put the coal miners back to work. We're going to put the coal miners back to work. The exact opposite of what Mr. Obama said 8 years ago when he said, we're going to put coal miners out of work. But, you know, he actually did. You know, some of these politicians don't keep their promises. Unfortunately, Mr. Obama, which we've detailed in this program at length, had kept that promise. In fact, he put 411 coal-fired units out of business during the Obama years. Talk to us about what has happened during the Obama years, and then we'll talk about what the prospects are going forward.
Barack Obama, Chris, was... the greatest destroyer that America's ever had. Not only of the lives and livelihoods of coal mining families, but for anyone in America who depends on reliable, low-cost electricity. In fact, he said in 2008, we're going to make electric rates skyrocket, and he has. You know, that couple that has a nest egg that they're depending on to live on, they're now paying 21% of every dollar, or 20 cents, 1 cent out of every dollar out for energy now. That single mother raising a family, she's paying out 22 cents of every dollar. That manufacturer of a product in Ohio is a manufacturing state, is paying out a huge amount. And Hillary Clinton had no energy policy. Her policy was to reward the makers of windmills and solar panels who contributed to the Clinton Foundation and to her campaign. Windmills and solar panel electricity cost 26 cents a kilowatt hour. Coal-fired electricity costs 4 cents a kilowatt hour. That 26 cent windmill and solar panel wouldn't even exist if it weren't for a 4 cent a kilowatt hour tax credit.
Right.
So it was all about money. It was all about pay to play. And the manufacturers, the billionaires, including Warren Buffett, who owns the wealthiest man in the country, said, you know, it doesn't make any sense, windmills. He's invested in them through his Mid-America Energy that he owns, an electric utility company. But he said, we make a lot of money on the tax credits. Well, that's coming from the taxpayer. That's coming from that coal miner that got laid off. That's coming from that couple on fixed income that's listening to your program right now.
Yes.
Or that single mother. And it was all upside down. But the working people, this was a victory for the working people of America. They saw through this. And God bless them. And we turned it upside down now.
Yeah, we did.
It's just not about bringing coal mining families back. It's about giving all hardworking Americans a better life.
Well, that's right. That's exactly right. Congressman Johnson, from your district, of course, which came out very strong for Donald J. Trump all over the southeast portion of our state, the state of Ohio. In fact, Mr. Trump won Ohio by a very big margin, 454,000 votes to his credit over Hillary Clinton. That's a huge jump. In fact, this battleground state is normally a swing of about 144,000 vote swing, but Mr. Trump won it convincingly, and Southeast Ohio, which is really energy country in this state, with obviously coal, oil, and gas, this is what the new economic engine is of your district. They came out big for Mr. Trump. Your thoughts?
Well, they did, Chris, and a lot of the reason why they did was because of exactly what you heard in the news clip just a few minutes ago. Mr. Trump promises to put coal miners and coal companies back to work. Hillary Clinton came through and said that they were going to put coal miners and coal companies out of business.
She did.
And the people did not forget that. When in the primary, 17 of my 18 counties voted for Donald Trump over our very popular governor in Ohio, and in the general election, my district, Mr. Trump carried my district somewhere on the order of about 25, between 25 and 30%, some counties higher than others.
Yes,
but you're exactly right. Hardworking Ohioans along the Ohio River that have many, you know, tens of thousands of them that have made their livelihoods working in the coal industry, either in harvesting coal or burning coal to produce energy, and then those businesses that benefit from low-cost, affordable energy to run their manufacturing operations, the word got out that Donald Trump was the candidate that stood for coal, and it really paid off.
One of the videos that you put together during this last summer, I thought was very compelling. You were there in front of the Ohio River, and you said this used to be a thriving thoroughfare of barges up and down this river, servicing industry and the coal being transported. And you said it's been quiet, and these communities have been quiet. It's been devastating. And I thought that was a very compelling message, and one in which really resonated with not just that region, but for a lot of people who understand the importance of Ohio's resources and what they've meant over the years, what the coal industry has meant. And Mr. Murray, as you pointed out, very affordable energy for people, for moms and dads who are raising families, for seniors that are on a fixed income, for businesses that are trying to reach that, lessen that bottom line so they can produce and actually provide jobs for other Ohioans. All of it is in a big picture, you know, and we look at the candidate, and again, he says, we're going to put the miners back to work, and people say, oh, that's just another candidate talking. What we're seeing in Mr. Trump, he hasn't even been sworn into office, and he's already saving jobs. I mean, over in Indiana, in fact, Mr. Obama mocked the presidential candidate, Donald Trump, says, oh, he's not going to be able to save those courier jobs. And that was an industry there that was going to leave to Mexico. Well, that just turned around. That industry and that company chose to stay in America. This guy gets things done. And when he makes a promise, he seems to be able to keep it. Your thoughts, Mr. Murray?
Well, on the carrier situation, it is owned by a technological firm, and they make Pratt & Whitney jet engines. And I'm sure that the management of Carrier didn't want to keep those jobs in the United States, but Mr. Trump used the leverage, because our Navy, our Air Force, uses those Pratt & Whitney engines that United Technologies, which owns Carrier, build. So that's the difference between having a businessman in as president or a political hack that we've had for the last 8 years.
Well said.
So, now, over in coal, you ask about coal.
Yes.
I've asked Mr. Trump, who I talked with last week. He called me. I suggested that he temper his commitments to our coal miners, because he can't bring the coal industry back. You said the number earlier, Chris. He has closed, Obama, 411 coal-fired power plants. Before Obama, 52% of our electricity came from 4 cents a kilowatt-hour coal. Today, it's 30%. If the clean power plan is enacted, it'll go to 18%. It can't be brought back more than what it is now. Once you tear down, close a power plant, and then tear it down, it's gone forever. But we can stabilize it and stop the destruction.
Yes.
And how does Mr. Trump do it? Number one, Mr. Obama's administration has passed 82,000 pages of regulations in the 7 years. They have thousands of people that he's brought into the government to sit there and write regulations to end the jobs for my coal miners and for everyone else in this country. So first thing we got to do is we got to eliminate at least half of these people sitting there writing rules, these bureaucrats in Washington, in the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. We also have to do the same thing with the Department of Interior, which is bloated. We've got to get out of the COP21 agreement and the Paris Agreement. That was a fraud. That's just about getting money, American money, into these foreign countries, and Obama's already given them $500 million, which he has no right to do because he didn't run it by Congress. And we've got to stop the subsidies for windmills and solar panels. We've got so many things that we have to do in this government to get the country turned around. We've got to get an appointee on the U.S. Supreme Court that'll follow the U.S. Constitution and not the politics of the liberals, which is every person that Mr. Obama put on that court is not followed the Constitution, but have voted their political leanings, which are radical.
Well, you bring a great point, because 50, I'm reading from one of your speeches that you presented, that 50 bankrupt coal companies in the United States in recent years. This is the kind of problems that we've seen on the war on coal that the Obama administration has waged against the coal industry. And then, of course, you, Mr. Murray, have been fighting in the courts, and then you did get a stay on the Supreme Court. In fact, just 1 week prior to Justice Scalia's passing. And if it had come a week later, you may not have gotten a favorable decision. You did get a stay on that. So it's kind of in a holding. We're talking about the EPA regulations that the Obama administration put forward in their clean, so-called clean power plan. But it really is a war not only on coal, but on energy and on people that really need affordable energy. What is the prognosis going forward? Obviously, we know that Mr. Trump is going to appoint a conservative justice very quickly once he gets in the office. Congressman, how do you see this moving forward, not only in the courts, but also on the congressional side? Because there's some things you could do very quickly. And of course, the president-elect, he can do some executive orders as well that would relieve the situation. Your thoughts?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think the President-elect Trump has made it very clear that one of his first priorities, maybe even on day one, that he's going to announce his appointment to Justice Scalia's seat. And so that nomination process will begin. You know, we've seen the list of people, and they're all very, very credible out of the mold of a Justice Scalia. In the meantime, within hours of the election being finalized, discussions had already begun between House leadership, Senate leadership, and the administration's, the new incoming administration's transition team about the things that we were going to work on. I can tell you that I met with Speaker Paul Ryan earlier this week. He fully understands at the top of our list, and it's one of the top things on his list as well. Is the stream protection rule. That's one of the most onerous rules that we've got to deal with. It could go publish. It could be published on December 16th, but we've got what's called the Congressional Review Act that we can go after that rule, and that is something that that we will be able to do almost immediately under the new administration and set that rule aside. It is all hands on deck, and I think the president-elect has made it very clear that he's going to support the coal industry, and I don't see him backing off of that.
You know, in your interview on Fox Business News with Charles Payne, Mr. Murray, the question was asked, is it too little too late? And of course, he was referencing the 411 coal firing units that have been shut down, the EPA rulings that have just stranglehold on the coal industry. Of course, you were very relieved, of course, with the President Trump coming to office, what that's going to mean. You're talking about stabilizing the industry. So some of the positive things that could happen, though, is also exports of coal. You talked about in your interview that China plans on increasing its coal usage by 20%. I was also thinking about the growing economy of India. So it does present opportunities for the coal industry here in America as well. Explain.
Yes, I can. It's projected that electricity use around the world will increase 1.4% per year between now and 2040. That's from the U.S. Energy Information Agency. So that is a growth worldwide. China, who supported the COP21 climate change agreement week before last, announced that it's increasing its coal use another 20%. So they obviously weren't sincere about their commitment to COP21, nor was any other country. They just wanted American money, which Mr. Obama has already sent them $500 million of, or $500 million of. So we have this worldwide growth. Half the homes in India, Chris, do not have a light bulb right now for heat as well as light. There are 7.4 billion people on this planet right now, 7.4 billion. 1.3 billion of them do not have access to electricity, don't even have electricity. We have an energy poverty problem around this country. We don't have a global warming problem. Global warming is a hoax, as Donald Trump said it was. It was a straw man, a shill for the liberals of this country to try to subsidize windmills and solar panels. I'll give you an example. Elon Musk, that owns Tesla and SolarCity, that man has gotten $5 billion now from the U.S. taxpayer, but he's only made a slight profit in two quarters.
Oh, my.
So there's become a blur in this country between private enterprise and government enterprise, which the Democrats were all about. And we got to get rid of that and get back to job creation. Private enterprise. People ought to be shocked. Everybody that doesn't get power from a windmill or a solar panel right now subsidizes those that do in every state of this country. That's got to be ended. And, of course, the Congress a year ago extended those tax credits. They've got to be ended. And if I can compete, and our coal can compete, with natural gas, with nuclear, as long as there's a level playing field, where the government gets out and does not pick winners and losers, which is what we've had under this government. We got to get back to the private sector doing it. It can do it better, it always has, than the government.
Well, there will be emerging markets, and of course, I think Charles even pointed out when he was interviewing you that Japan, of course, is looking to turn away from nuclear in this sense. Obviously, they've had some devastating earthquakes there with tsunami, and they may be looking to start some coal fire plants in Japan. That would be another export market for the coal industry here in America. So it does look bright in that sense going forward. But again, regulation, the EPA regulations still hanging over the head of the industry. The president can do it. The newly elect president can do a lot with that. And of course, Congress. Now, we've seen a lot of these windmills and solar farms actually abandoned. That's what they're subsidized by taxpayers. And then they're not really producing. There's a lot of challenge with that industry, and they can't stand on their own two feet, as it were. The coal industry has been strangled by the Obama administration, but now it is a new day going forward, and we're so thankful for it. And it means a lot for those on fixed income, seniors, the single mom in the inner city, families, because, again, the bottom line of affordable energy going forward. And so this will be part of the solution going forward. You know, we've talked in our past programs about the grid itself being compromised or made vulnerable. And a few winters ago, we had the polar vortex came down. There's a projection for another early polar vortex by mid-December. I don't know if you've seen that. They're talking about the lower 48. Being plunged into a very deep freeze. And of course, here in Ohio, we're going to get hit hard, what they're projecting in about 2 weeks from now. It's coming down from Alaska. I think they're saying Fairbanks is something like 35 below right now. And even with wind chill factor, even much more than that, that's coming this way. Again, what we talked about is that taking these coal fire plants offline has compromised the integrity of the grid, and it has put us in jeopardy. Congressman, what do you see going forward? Has there been discussion in Congress about the vulnerability of the grid because of the Obama policies and how we're going to turn that around?
Absolutely. That's a big topic of discussion here in the House on the Energy and Commerce Committee, Chris. I've actually started the process of putting together a U.S. electric grid working group to focus attention just on that topic alone, much like we have cybersecurity and encryption and those kinds of things. But you're absolutely right, because what we know is that there's basically three sources of energy that can provide the base load to our electric grid. That's nuclear, that's natural gas, and that's coal. And we all know that coal is the cheapest of those three, the cheapest and the most affordable of those three. And so there is that's what we've got to focus on. Wind and solar and alternative green energies cannot provide the base load for our energy grid. And I think that's what you're going to see the new president do immediately is stop the hemorrhaging as it relates to the energy grid, because whoever he selects as his energy secretary is going to get a briefing right away from the House Energy and Commerce Committee about the vulnerabilities to the grid, the way that we see it, and this polar vortex scenario that you're talking about, it very well could happen again. And so it's a real concern, and I think you're going to see the new president take that issue on head on.
Well, you know, our good friend who has joined us on a number of these programs, Jim Martin of the 60 Plus Association, wasn't able to join us today due to he was just released from the hospital. And our thoughts and prayers are with Jim. And of course, but I think here in our second part, we're going to have Pat Boone, the national spokesman of the 60 Plus Association, that will be sharing with us in just a few minutes. But we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to News in Focus and a roundtable discussion on the coal industry and energy policy going forward. We did say it was the war on coal, but thankfully that war is coming to an end due to the election of November 8th, and the prospects are looking a lot better going forward, but there's still a lot of challenges ahead. Well, we've run out of time, gentlemen. We're going to have to cut it off there. Thank you. God bless you for joining us, and this has been a great opportunity. Thank you all.
Your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.